bringing you some holiday cheer with some holiday beer. This is episode 132 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com, live from our favorite bar. It's the holiday time, and I think the holiday time requires something a little festive. So I don't know if you noticed, but recording with us again today on my headphones borrowed from my girlfriend is Hello Kitty.
Oh, nice. I'm starting to think that's actually secretly yours. And
I'm just, it's, what do they call dudes that like Hello Kitties? Because, you know, they got bronies.
Cadets.
Cadets?
I don't know. Yo, kitty cats? Instead of hello?
Oh, okay. Yo, kitty cats? Or what up, bitchy kitty? I don't know.
Yo, tomcats.
Yep. The tomcats. I think that's what it, I think that's what it's going to have to be. So, hey, so Merry Christmas. Belated, obviously, to everybody out there. And it's Tony and I drinking a few beers. You know, not quite breakfast beers, but
beers nonetheless.
I'm still on the coffee beer kick.
I have never got on that kick, and I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, well, I think you should give it a shot at some point. Actually, have you tried we talked about the bean flicker.
Mm-hmm. I've had that, it's all right. I mean, I don't have a deep hatred for it. It's just, it's not my cup of beer.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a cup of tea.
Yeah, no, I understand that. You know, I mean, it makes sense, but all right, well, hey, let's get things kicked off. This is Drunk on Comics, as I would hope that our listeners know at this point. I don't know how you tune in late to this if you just go, I'll skip a little ahead. But I'm Derek, and Tony with me here once again, and doing our little post-holiday celebration at our favorite bar, and figured we'd talk to you guys a little bit about our favorite comics from this week and some news and some nerdly nuggets of fun.
Yeah, and just everything in between, and I don't know. Hopefully this will make your, since some of you might be sad that the holidays are over, you get to listen to us, and hopefully that cheers you up.
There are some people, although I'm sure probably happy that the holidays are over too. There's a lot of stress, man. Like, just trying to, like, buy the right presents, having to be like where you want to be. I mean, you know, it's, comics came out a couple days ago, and thank God I had a short stack this week, because there's no way I could have, I still didn't get through all of my books, and I had a extremely small stack of books this week, but you know, it happens. So
did you get anything cool
for Christmas?
Yeah,
actually the coolest thing is the fact that, like, my family has come to the understanding that I don't really want clothes. I don't really want stuff. And for the most part, I mean, I get a couple little things. Like, for years I've gotten the Get Fuzzy daily calendar.
Okay.
You know, because I love that strip. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the things that I always love. My sister always gives me Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And, but the, you know, it's like I got a couple, like, books. I got a couple other little things. But the majority of what I got was little boxes, and you open it up, and oh, hey, here's money, because it's all for Comic Cons and shit like that. So I'm like, I'm completely fine with that, you know, that my parents are like, yay, here, all right, we can't really shop for what you want, because A, they don't know what I have, you know, as far as what books, they don't know what issues I'm looking for, because I'm constantly buying, and so original art, it's pretty subjective, and you don't want to make a $250 mistake on a page.
Yeah.
Because there's no return policy on original art, you know, weird enough. So, but what about you?
I was quite happy. I got a bocce ball set, which will come in handy. But my mom, she just kept on bugging me of what I want, and there's not anything I really needed. So that was one of the things, summer game set. So she got me that. But I said, Legos are always still cool with me. So, and I was like, the Guardian of the Galaxy ones. So when I opened it, it's a pretty sweet set. It's got Rocket and Groot. And my mom goes, I almost got you a different one, but then I saw this one, and I go, oh, it's that tree guy. I know, he's talked about him. So she got me the set with Groot, and I'm like,
that tree guy.
Yeah. So at least she listens a bit to my nerdy stuff when we talk.
Nice.
I will say this, though. My nephew got a frickin' Power Wheel. You know those?
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and my brother both said, Mom, thanks. We've always wanted one of those as a kid. Now you just really made us feel sad for our childhood.
Well, maybe she loves her grandson more than she loves her kids, Tony. So let's get things kicked off. Why don't you start it out for us here, Tom?
Okay. I'm kind of going to talk about briefly two comics. The first starting off, Loki, Agents of Axis, right now, number 9. Following the story of good guy Loki. After the inversion of this access thing, he's become a good person, which honestly he has been within the pages of this, but he's still scheming, but he's young teenage, young adult Loki right now, and he's really good in this. Like, he embodies the spirit of giving and love and truth and everything, because it's the exact opposite of him lying and everything. And one of the things that he realized going up into this final battle, so this book coincides with the last access, which within access you can kind of get the story, but when you read it itself, it's a separate story coming from it, which is the one thing that I love that access has done. Is this is one of the few times, I was talking about Spider-Verse last week, where there are things going on which you buy the main book and you don't need these separate stories to kind of get a gist of what's going on. Most of some of these key things that happen in Loki Agents of Access, you can still see it happening in Access. But this gives a little more development for the book. This was written by Al Ewing and art by Lee Garbert. And it's pretty much, you know, the same format that Loki has had as far as art. But what this one, why I truly wanted to point it out is, it's kind of going into the battle of the main Axis story as well. So you get a hint of what's going on there. But if you're not reading Axis, you wouldn't know all the ins and outs of it. But Loki has heard that Thor is unworthy of his hammer, because Thor is now inversion bad guy of himself.
Yeah.
So one of his schemes, which he's realizing he can't do schemes, but maybe the only way to actually save the universe and stop Thor from destroying everyone is to come up with a scheme. In which he does. He pretty much pisses off Thor enough from the main battle that they go into their separate little battle amongst themselves into the blue area of the moon.
I need to stop you for 1 second. So now, because I'm reading Thor and Thor just showed up and he was all pissy in there. Obviously, I don't think I'd be too happy if I had my arm cut off and I couldn't lift my hammer either. You know, I mean, because that happens on a daily basis for mm-hmm. me. You know, losing my arm and shit, but... Anyway, so has Thor gone to the bad side? Like, I mean,
he's still... Here's the thing that I've now finally understood where this Axis thing is happening compared to Thor the book. This happens just previously to She-Thor picking up the hammer.
Okay.
Because the hammer's still on the moon.
Okay.
In which case, that tells me this has happened beforehand, which also explains why he doesn't have a metal arm.
Okay.
And that's been bugging me in this whole Axis thing for forever, thinking this coincides with him losing the hammer. Well, technically, he's lost the hammer since the last story arc of Original Sin. It's just still sitting up there. So now that I get that, within the pages of Avengers and everything, which is set 8 months ahead of time of all these other stories, he's still brooding. So pretty much he's still pissed, but he's not complete evil like he is within these pages of Axis. So he's... If that makes sense,
yeah.
In what he's acting like in Thor. One of my favorite things within this, though, is whenever they talk about the blue area of the moon, they always have to say, there's a spot on the moon where it has an atmosphere, which I think most Marvel readers, if you know anything about the moon, you know that there is this area, but I always love that every time they have to explain that to new beginner readers of like, oh, okay, I get it. People can breathe up there, so it's a place where you can fight. The reason why I truly wanted to talk about this book was because Loki has always been, you know, the bad guy. He knows in the realm of things he is going to be the big evil that is the I forget what he keeps calling himself, the problem that can never be solved or something. And within these pages, there's been a lot of other future Loki, this and that going on. But the greatest thing is this Loki, who's trying to be good, he's just hoping to God. He can't fight Thor by himself. Thor's still stronger than him. He's still young. But that he actually is worthy enough with his inversion to lift the hammer.
Hmm.
And that's where he starts putting the beat down on Thor. Thor, however, still is the god of thunder.
I'm grimacing only because I'm thinking about continuity. So they're on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
He picks up the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had seen Thor trying to lift it previously. But in the Thor comic, female Thor comes back and grabs it from the same place. So I just hope from continuity-wise, when they're done with the battle, that Loki just goes and puts it back in the exact same spot.
This is what happens. In this battle, you see all of a sudden Thor kind of still beating down Loki and calling down thunder. He goes, you know, this place has oxygen. This place has an atmosphere, in which case I can call down thunder. Loki gets zapped, but then he goes, but you forget, I hold this hammer. And he who holds this hammer has the power of Thor. That doesn't hurt me. And pretty much knocks Thor out. The conclusion of this, which coincides with Axis, to spoil that book, is the inversion got reversed. Loki's good side becomes bad, and Thor becomes good again. And the hammer drops from Loki's hand.
It might be that it might just be because previous to this, one of the things I like about coming to this bar earlier in the morning, or in the late morning, I should say, earlier in the day, is that they always have the prices right on. And so when you say Loki became bad again, Thor became good, I'm just thinking that, like, when people lose on the price, it's like, yeah.
Well, here's an awesome page. This is what it is. I am the crime that will not be forgiven. That's this thing that keeps going on in his mind of he doesn't know what that crime is. He doesn't know what it is. But ultimately, he's now unworthy to wield the hammer. Thor still is as well. But Thor doesn't remember this fight. Thor doesn't remember that Loki was worthy at one point, and that's kind of sad for our hero Loki. And that ends the big thing that I want to talk about here was Loki is one of the people that was able to lift the hammer.
I don't know if you mentioned... Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah. Ewing wrote it. And who did the art on this? Where's it at?
Should be in the first page.
Garbat?
Yeah.
Garbat? Yeah, I'm not familiar with Lee Garbett. I'm not familiar with his work. I don't know if you've seen him do anything else previously or not, but
not that it rings a bell, but
I do have to say I kind of like seeing Sabretooth in a mock-up of Wolverine's, you know, old brown and yellow Claremont era.
And that's duds. Something that we'll get a little bit more into within the Axis main book, Axis number 9, which, like I said, I kind of want to just briefly talk about him lifting the hammer, but to get to the meat and the grind, meat and the potatoes of this.
The meat and the grind?
I was going to say the meat and the grinder, but that wasn't right.
Getting to the meat and the gravy, you know, because the gravy, that's what you can hold on to.
Really, shut up.
Really well. It oozes through your fingers, but
because this says grinding halts.
You put the gravy in your mouth.
It's the damn title inside this book that messed me up. The main Axis series written by Rick Remender. There's a lot of different artists and pencilers and inkers because this is a pretty thick book. Let's go with their last name. Chungs, Dodson, Francis Yu, Adam Kubert. So I said his first name. Morales, Mikas, Ortega, Roslin, Dodson again, Chung, Francis Yu, Kubert, inkers. Paul Mounts was the colorist. Chris Eliopoulos was the letterer.
I will say though, with the Kuberts, you do have to say the first name because it could be Adam or Andy. So that one, yeah.
In here, one of the first things that you will see in going over the whole story, which I briefly mentioned before when we talked about Scarlet Witch's big reveal of their not being Magneto's kids. Some of which were these inversion people. The biggest thing that I was figuring out what Deadpool is, because I'm behind on Deadpool, is he's pretty much a hippie guy now. Gave up, you know, fighting, mercenary, and pretty much peace and love. And his big arc within this, I feel like he's almost the big hero that helped save the day, is you remember when he was with X-Force, him and Phantom X, Uncle Cluster, took a liking to Evan, Young Apocalypse. And Apocalypse being inverted, well, Evan being inverted pretty much turned him into Apocalypse, which was a big point in the story of him coming down with his ship in the middle of New York and pretty much was going to set off a bomb to destroy humans. Now that Apocalypse has a huge group of X-Men on his side, and unlike just the Four Horsemen, they're kicking ass and taking names. You have the other Avengers like Falcon, or Captain Falcon, or whatever he'd be now.
He's Captain America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's still Falcon. But them and having those guys realizing that they love their new freedom of, they are evil, but in themselves, they like this ability to just say, fuck it, I'm not going to do this, or it's all about me, and being selfish about it. And then you have old man Steve Rogers, who suits up in his old uniform to try to go save the Red Skull. However, Red Skull did get inverted as well, and he's not red, he's more pale-faced Skull. And that was one of the key things. I kept looking at him like, why the hell is he not drawn with a Red Skull, until you start realizing, oh, they actually did invert him, which was the main focus of bringing Xavier's mind to the forefront, so this is a good Red Skull. He's actually trying to help Steve get out of here. He's realizing he needs to sacrifice himself to make this inversion go back to the regular way it was. The biggest point of in here that I... Like I said, there's stories within here that you can read the main title here and get the gist of what's going on. There are some outside books that I didn't pick up. We've got some of the Avengers and this and that. Somehow Steve Rogers has a kid, and that has kind of thrown me for a loop, which is making me want to go back and to see where that came from.
You don't know who the mom is?
Not who the mom, or if it's even real, his kid, or a adopted kid, or whatever. But the kid, I think his name
is... is his name Bucky?
His name is Ian. So that's pretty much what I'm getting. You see all the main people are here in New York, for the most part, except for Thor and Loki being off-site. But everyone's pretty much battling. What I've liked out of this entire story is... Remember AVX and how that was the first time the Avengers and X-Men fought, which it really wasn't, because we found out in the past they fought many times before.
Well, no, they fought back, like,
yeah,
way back, like, in Avengers, like, 50-something. I have that issue.
Yeah, and I don't want to say this is superior to AVX, but it is. But it's not AVX in a way that...
All right, but is it superior to Spider-Man?
nothing will beat Ghost Peter, so... But I can't say this is exactly AVX either, because although it is X-Men Avengers fighting, some of them are all bad guys, and some of them realizing, even though they hate each other, Avengers are pissed that the X-Men took over their headquarters and kicked them out, the evil Avengers, because the good Avengers are...
So this is kind of like Marvel's own version of their amalgam titles, where they just go, good guys and bad guys, and we'll mix people up, and all of a sudden, basically... This good guy is going to replace that bad guy and vice versa.
Kind of. I mean, not word for word who they'd be replacing, but just knowing their powers and how they're acting now. One of the titles I was picking up, Access Carnage, where Carnage is trying to be a good guy. He just doesn't realize, being a psychopath, that his thoughts of good aren't necessarily the best. You get Creed, Sabretooth, who's also a good guy in this, because he's trying to... And it starts off, this one, with... Wolverine saying, there's some good in you somewhere. And it's like a flashback, which I love the roster. You have Wolverine with his ex, you know. He's not in here, but the first pages is Wolverine in the past saying, Sabretooth, you got good. And he's just like, nope, I have no good.
Yeah.
He is one of the main after effects of this. What I was trying to go back to of Deadpool being the good guy, he kept trying to talk to Apocalypse. There's an Evan in there. There is still a part of you that wants to be good. And... he at least reached him. So Apocalypse actually started being good, helping Steve Rogers reverse the effect. What they needed was Wanda, who's a bad guy, to somehow do the spell with Doom.
You know what they need? They need hope.
Yeah, where the fuck's she been?
I don't... You know, we were talking about that... My girlfriend Mel and I were talking about that the other day. Because we're at, like, a little outlet store that has, like, you know, it's just all their old shit discounted. And there's a Hope Summers action figure in there. And I'm like, psh. I'm like, that's, like, and it's a cool action figure. And I really like that character. But she's gone. What the fuck?
Yeah. Like, nowhere to be found. And no one, I guess, cares about the, was she the Messiah?
Yeah, well, maybe the Messiah had to go to boarding school for a while, you know?
At the Jean Grey Institute of Technology?
The Jean Grey Institute of How to Be Reincarnated Later.
Yeah. All I'm going to say is what I learned in one of the other Avengers books that I didn't pick up is Doom resurrected Dr. Voodoo and is Dr. Voodoo's brother. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
And all. Dr. Voodoo, you know who Dr. Voodoo is?
No.
Really?
No.
All right. He was a Sorcerer Supreme at one point, but he's pretty much a voodoo witch doctor. But same pairing as Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Because Doctor Strange is missing too right now. He has Dr. Voodoo's ghost brother possess Scarlet Witch, so at least they could use her.
Is it really a ghost brother, or do you just think it is?
No, he is. He legitimately is, and he's been the ghost brother in all continuity for a long time. Unless they fuck with me, and then it's all in Dr. Voodoo's mind. God, that would be bad. Ultimately, they save the day. They reverse the effects. Doom takes off. And the conclusion of this, in that final battle, is knowing there's still a superior Iron Man, he's still kind of a dick bad guy. How does that happen? Well, him knowing that this might happen and taking effect, put up a shield around himself, Havoc, and Sabretooth. Everyone, it doesn't matter if you're on the moon, like we just previously talked about in Loki, they reversed. But the three people that were in this shield did not get reversed back to normal.
Okay, so now who were the three people in there again?
Havoc.
Yep.
Iron Man and Sabretooth.
So what's interesting is that Havoc might finally live up to his name and create some havoc.
And that he was such a big proponent in the Uncanny Avengers of being this peaceful person, and now he's got the new mantle of Cyclops being the dick of the Summers brothers. My favorite part of this whole conclusion is, well, A, Doom and Red Skull are gone. Red Skull still got powers. He's back to being a bad guy. And, oh, he looks like he's hooked up to something in Doom's workshop. So
that's kind of Cerebro-esque.
Yeah. So that's going to be some big things that are going to happen in Marvel. But the biggest that I think I'm most excited for out of this entire story, A, the continuation of Superior Iron Man. I have enjoyed him being an asshole. Only in the sense of it's a different take on the Iron Man that I've been reading for multiple times. But ultimately, the conclusion is written by Sabretooth, sitting in a jail cell, saying, holy shit, I'm trying to be like you, Wolverine. I'm trying to have the spirit of Wolverine. I'm going to be what you thought I was going to be. And having Sabretooth now be this good inversion of himself, I'm very excited to see what happens with that character.
I have an idea.
What?
My idea is, what if the Superior Spider-Man that's still roaming around in the Spider-Verse series and Peter Parker Spider-Man, the current one who was never a ghost. how many years have we been arguing about that, by the way, which is great. A year and a half, two?
Yeah, it'd be, I think two now.
Yeah. But what if you could actually get that Doc Ock to share his technology with like, the X-Men, and then they could somehow switch Sabretooth and Wolverine and switch their minds so that Wolverine is now in Sabretooth's body and Sabretooth is encased in adamantium?
So you're assuming that there's a ghost Wolverine out there somewhere.
He's not a ghost.
I'm pretty sure he's not alive in that adamantium thing, because if he is, that'd be a shitty existence for him to have.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming he is, because that's Wolverine's luck. Yeah. You know, but.
And like, I was thinking there was going to be a bigger Marvel shattering of, like, conclusion to this story. I'm actually kind of fine that it went to just kind of the wayside of what we get now out of this is still having the superior, like I said, superior Iron Man and this good Sabretooth. And with Havoc kind of over the Summers brothers, the last thing that I will say, though, is you have all these Avengers and people who are being assholes, bad guys, and the world's going to come against them. But you have these bad guys like Carnage, Hobgoblin, Doom, and all these other ones. you see a little news feed of like havoc in New York, not havoc, but
okay. Mayhem.
Yeah, mayhem in New York, and not the guy from the Allstate commercials, but
I love those Allstate commercials. I'm the kid in 3B that's making it rain down in 2B.
I was confused at first until it got to the next page where it shows Carnage saying, yeah, all this was us. We are the axis of evil. We're the ones that destroyed New York. And I'm like, wait, when the fuck did they record this? They were all good guys. Why would they record this? They knew that what they were trying to do was reverse things. These bad guys that became good guys said, hey, we can't have this fall onto you true Avengers who are going to become good again. We need to take the fall for this. We're going to be hated even more, but we're going back to our bad ways anyways. Let us videotape something to throw it under the rug and say it was all us and not you guys. And I thought that was kind of a real heroic thing for them to do.
Well, here's my real question on this. You know, I'm done with events.
I feel this was an event. It was more of a story arc. Because like I said, it didn't have a huge earth-shattering thing, like an event.
Events don't. That's the whole point. That's why I'm done with them. Because events, once they're done, everything goes back to status quo. The only positive thing I can say about events is if they are a really good story. It seems like it's pretty much a flip of a coin now as to whether or not an event is worth reading or not.
True.
Is this one worth reading?
It very much so is. It was something that I've read many events. I've past, present, future of Marvel.
You love events.
I can time travel and see what's coming ahead.
No, Marvel just
lets us know ahead of time what's going to happen.
Yeah.
This was actually a good story.
Okay.
It was something different that you're like, I've never thought of that before. How would this person react in this situation?
So if somebody hadn't read it, once it comes out in trade, pick it up?
Very much so. And there's a couple key things that I didn't say that happened in the end that makes you also go, that's pretty awesome. And it's mainly the bad guys that make this work, the bad guys that became heroes. Those books, even in themselves, are one of the main reasons you want to read this because you're, like, rooting for them. So,
yeah. So I've got two books that I do want to mention today. Both of these are our creator-owned products or projects. The one is Butterfly, and I've talked about this one before, and this is issue 4 of 4, so it's the wrap-up of the miniseries. Butterfly is from Archaea Comics, and this is the story is by Arash Amel, and Marguerite Bennett actually wrote this story. It's illustrated by Stefano Simeone. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Colors are Adam Gazowski. And this book... Oh, and I'm sorry, cover by Phil Noto. He's done all 4 of the covers on here. The thing... This book, I think, is probably hands down the most intelligent book of 2014. Just because of the fact that I've never seen a book where not only have I wanted to, but really in order to get the full enjoyment out of it, I've had to go back.
Yeah, I remember the first one that you were doing. How many times have you had to reread the other issues?
I'd say I probably read the first issue 5, maybe 6 times now. The second issue, 3 or 4. The third issue, at least 3. And now the fourth issue, 4. Or the fourth issue, twice. And I'll probably go back and reread all of them in order again. Because holy fuck, is there a lot going on in this book? I want to start actually with the covers, because the covers, the way that they're laid out, you know, half of the cover on the outer edge, where you'd flip open, has the logo Butterfly, you know, and the credits on there, and then you have the other half panel is a picture, but if you look on the back side, there's half of it where it kind of gives you like a tiny little blurb about it and then a picture. But every one of these covers, when you open the cover up and you see it, it's actually a full-size picture in the middle of it that makes a hell of a lot of sense when you read the story. And the fact that the covers, because so often we see covers, excuse me, where the cover will be solicited before the story's even completed.
And looking at the big two, they're always of the hero, like, dying, you know, and you're like, oh my god, are they going to die in this issue, which has nothing to do with the issue.
Yeah, which actually reminds me of issue 142 of Uncanny X-Men in the Days of Future Past, where everyone dies in this issue, but they did. They didn't lie. It was just different future version.
Yeah.
But no, this is one of those things where the covers are great insight into actually what's going on in the book. This story focuses around a girl whose father worked for a secret government organization, worked for the CIA or whatever it was, and I haven't given away, by the way, there are spoilers here, so if you want to skip ahead, now is your time. There's your warning. Her father worked for a secret government organization. He did a lot of counterintelligence and secret spy shit, and he got killed when she was young, like 11, 12 years old. And when she went to college, she started scoring high in all these tests and aptitudes and this and that, and she ended up going into the same type of government program that her father did. She kills people. She, you know, does dirty work for the government, which, you know, it may be something that you say, oh, that's terrible, but it's something that in order for governments to and cultures and civilizations to thrive, sometimes you got to take out other people.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, or indifferent, it is what it is. She finds out later on, after she's set up, that her father is actually alive. And so this story is as much about her and her father kind of coming back together, not in a comfortable sense, but that they've come back together, and she's like, all right, you were really good at what you did. I'm now the best at what I do. And now everyone's after them. Not like Wolverine. I know. I see that fucking smirk. This isn't a story about Logan and X-23. But the reason, though, that I say that this is probably the most intelligent book of 2014 is when you look at the way that this book is laid out, they do a lot of things that are interesting. I've talked before about how they jump back and forth in time. And, I mean, this one is no different. However, the one thing that I do appreciate about it, they actually say, this is now, this is this year, this is that year, this is 3 weeks prior, 10 days prior. I mean, you almost need, like, a fucking, like, you know,
put chart. It all out on a freaking, giant graph of, like, take these pages out, put it here, and you can see it.
And I would... My one suggestion is that I would love to see in an omnibus have this thing come out. And I am saying omnibus because I want this printed twice. I want it printed once as it came out in the four issues, and I want it printed another time chronologically. I want to read that thing chronologically. I'm almost tempted to go buy a couple more copies of this, or just photocopy it, really, for that matter. And then cut it apart and put it together to make my own version.
That'd be
sweet.
Of
that. So, thanks, Holly.
I really like this inside the front cover too. All these guns that make up this.
All the guns that make up the butterfly. Yeah, it's fantastic. And actually, one of the reasons I've got this open, I wanted you to see. This is some really, really unique and smart layout, because what they've got, they have in Alexandria, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. both current times. Now, Alexandria, Virginia is only like 7 miles, I think, from D.C.
Okay.
And the only reason I know that is my sister used to live there, and I used to go down and, you know, you walk maybe a quarter of a mile down to the metro and hop it and ride it into D.C. and it's there. But, you know, your first panel on the top left is Alexandria, your top right is D.C., and then if you read it your normal way, there's six panels on here, you'd read, you know, top left, top right, middle left, middle right, and down. But as you go down in column-wise, it's that area, that character. And they actually keep it up for two pages.
Okay, nice.
And so it's a very unique, because you see that these things are happening simultaneously, but at the same time, you know, there's that break. And you could read, this happens to this happens to that person, but it's happening at the same time, and it's shown at the same time on the page. That's why I was very, very impressed with the way that this is broken out. I don't want to give away too much on the story on here, because there are some twists in here, and there are some things that happen that make you go, holy shit, I really can't believe they did that. Because, you know, when you're dealing with espionage stuff, yeah, you know, not everybody survives. But this book, it's a hell of a lot of fun, because, Jesus, I haven't thought this much about a comic in years.
That's what I was almost going to say. Should the title be Mindfuck?
It's not quite as much of a mindfuck as some of the other books that we've had that have been mindfucks. But this one, it is just so brilliant. There's no reason anyone should miss this book. It's left in such a way that even though it's a four-part series, it could continue. It could continue in another miniseries. It doesn't ever need to be an ongoing. But if another four-issue series came out, I'd be on board in a heartbeat. This is one of those books, too, where when the trade comes out, I will buy the trade, because I'm going to hand this around to people that don't read comics. Because this is not your normal comic book. It's so beautifully done. The art is fantastic. The writing is probably the most superior writing that you're going to find out there. More superior than Spider-Man.
Okay.
No offense, Dan Slott. But, yeah, so go check out Butterfly. I know that the local comic shops around here, they still have one or two individual copies of each issue. So, you know, at least in our area, I know that you could run out and grab it. The second book that I want to talk about this week is from Image Comics, and it's They're Not Like Us. And this is written by Eric Stevenson. Art is by Simon Gain. Color is by Jordi Belair, which I'm not going to lie, that's why I picked up the book. And then Fonographics did the letters on this. This was an interesting one, and it caught me off guard, and it wasn't until the second time through this book that I realized that I didn't pay attention to the cover, and I should have. Because the cover is actually the first panel of the comic.
Oh.
Like, I just saw the cover. I'm like, okay, yeah, big, bold letters, feet, yeah. Words, names, okay, flip it open. And then on the inside, and this is one of those books, too, which the last time I saw it was from Image, and it was Zero, where the inside front cover starts the story, and the inside back cover finishes the story. There are no ads whatsoever. There's no letter columns. There's no extra anything in here. This is just a book. I'm going to start by saying the one negative thing about this, and we don't normally talk about negatives, but the book is $2.99. That's not a negative, but it's appropriately priced, because I wish there was a lot more. The positive from it, I understand why they stopped where they stopped. It just felt very short to me. Mm-hmm. It was an insanely quick read on here. Basically, the story follows this girl who is about to jump off of a building and kill herself because no one understands her. And honestly, it sounds to me a lot like when you're first reading this character, who later is referred to as Sid. Excuse me. Sid starts out in this where you're like, oh, shut the fuck up. No one gets me. My parents don't get me. And it's that whole entitlement generation bullshit that I hate. And you find out later, the reason no one understands her is she's a telepath.
Hmm.
She hears voices. She hears thoughts. She's not like everyone else. I.e., they're not like us. And she's brought into this household, this old Victorian home, by another guy who is also a telepath, but not nearly, as what they say, not nearly as advanced as she is. And there's a whole group of young people. They're all in their early 20s. And you're introduced to these people in here. And it's probably the latter half of the book when you're introduced to them. And they all have different powers. There's one guy who's kind of like a telepath, but they call him a technopath. He can't communicate with people through his mind, but he can communicate through computers and electronics.
Lawnmower man.
Yeah. And you've got a speedster in here. You've got somebody that can create illusions. You've got, you know, all these different abilities in here. And this is a really cool origin book for a group of people that could be good, could be bad. You don't really know right now. But if you like the superhero trope and genre, this is that kind of book set in a realistic setting. And so it's I don't expect it to be a superhero story per se. I don't think they're going to be wearing spandex and big bright costumes. In fact, I hope they actually
joke about it, though.
Well, actually, they do kind of mention the fact, and this is where Stevenson, I think, did a nice job, because he talks about how they are able to hide in plain sight, and they have to take this girl, Sid, out and take her shopping, because she has to be dressed well, because people that are dressed well don't draw attention to themselves. The people that they brought into this group, none of them have like weird piercings or tattoos or strangely colored hair. They don't want people that have things that are going to be noticeable and identifiable. They want people that can just blend in. And like I said, I mean, it is a quick read, but it's a damn good read.
I will say this, the last page, as you were saying, you know, it ends on that last page. Yeah, that doesn't look like it ended, like, you're missing a page. Like, there should have been something else to, like, they're just talking and then it's done. It reminded me a little bit of, like, Walking Dead, where it just ends.
Yeah, well, you know, and Tony, I actually do want you to read those last two panels, because all you need to know is that Sid has been brought into this place. And for those that, I'm not going to spoil it on the air while Tony, you know, is reading and moving his mouth, because he can't read and not have his lips move. It's a good thing we're audio, right?
Yeah.
I'm just fucking, your lips weren't moving because you can't read. But
I see colors.
Yeah. They leave you, and you'll understand, like, you understand now why they stopped it there without reading the rest of the book.
Oh, no, yeah, yes. But I feel like, though, there should have been that... As they're going through a door, usually there'd be that in any book that you'd open that door and you'd see whatever was behind it, and it'd be like to be continued or something. That's what I'm saying. That's what it feels like.
There's no big splash page at the end, but the words are their own splash page.
True.
On this, and that's, you know, this is again a little bit more of a thinker's book than I think a lot of the other ones that are out there. And that's why I liked it. You know, the artwork. Overall, I enjoyed it. I think I liked the actual panel layouts and perspectives more than the actual characters in here. You know, I don't know what it is about it. I liked it, but I didn't love it. There's something, and maybe it's just because I was too concentrated on the actual dialogue that was going on that I wasn't paying as close attention to the art. Going back through it a second time, there's a lot of nice detail in here, but it's weird because there's a lot of detail, but yet it's flat at the same time, which is a weird compliment.
Yeah.
you know, I don't know. But it's very unique, and Gain did a really nice job overall. And colors by Jordi Belair, this is a Jordi Belair book. You know, I mean, it's like I've loved what she's done every time I see her work. And so if you guys want to try something that is not so far outside the realm, if you're a listener who really enjoys the big two books and you don't always jump out to those more creator owned book or everyday books, this is an everyday book, I think, that's more made for those people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I was going to end up talking that much about it in last call if we got that far anyway. So, all right.
Let's get to a lot of news this week. I mean, it just seems like they were just piling it on this holiday season.
You're a liar. And by the way, just because it's not 2015 yet, Santa still counts this for his list for next year. So you might want to recant that. There wasn't shit this week for news. But we did find a couple things out
there. We scraped the bottom of the barrel, but...
Speaking of the barrel, I'm going to drink some more beer.
One of the things that I found, which is great for enjoying the movie and how they're doing it, is it has been stated by James Gunn, the director and everything of Guardians of the Galaxy, that number two is not going to be a prequel.
He said number two.
It's not going to be a prequel to Avengers Infinity War. He said that if characters are in that movie or other Avengers are in his movie, great. But he's really setting it apart from having anything to do with the Avengers. They're going to do their own thing. They're creating their own cinematic, cosmic part of the universe. And that's how it's going to stay. And I kind of am glad to see that not everything has to be Avengers-oriented going up to it, like Iron Man and Thor and all them.
I think probably the coolest part about that whole news segment, though, was that he announced that they're going to introduce Angela into Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, I'm lying. Don't listen to that, Santa. That actually is a lie.
Watch it all of a sudden be announced the next day, and then you're going to be a liar.
Yeah. According to Drunk on Comics, Angela's getting introduced and blah, blah, blah. No, stop it. All right. Speaking of movies and shared universes, it was confirmed because there was some stuff out there that was rolling around that I don't know why, but people seemed to question whether or not Shazam was going to be in the same cinematic universe as the Superman, Batman movies. Yes, it is. So there.
Because that's what they're trying to make, a giant universe of superheroes. I don't know why that was ever questioned.
I don't know either, but there were some statements that people thought hinted at. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know what? If you want to look at hints, I think that you know, the people that own Charmin also own Taco Bell. I mean, you can see the correlation there too. But they don't. So move on.
Also owners of Pepto-Bismol.
Oh, yeah. Actually, no. I'm just trying to think. I think whoever owns, like, Jägermeister also owns, like, you know, late-night diners. Because when you're out drinking, you always want to go have breakfast after. So, it's IHOP and Jägermeister. They're in cahoots.
This is the point in our show where we put on our tinfoil hats. And it's just been announced that Mike Coulter is cast as Luke Cage, which I see that. I mean...
I'm leaving that alone, Tony.
No, but I...
It's not like... why? Because it's not Michael Chiklis?
He was great as Thing. I mean, he was a good Thing.
Yeah.
A good Thing at time.
Yeah. I don't know Mike Coulter except for the fact that he was in The Good Wife.
Okay. I watched The Following, so he was in that. So I he's a pretty good actor, but I can see him
being a
badass.
I only know him with a shaved head. Like, okay. The only picture that I saw of him was him with a shaved head, and I'm like... I hope he can grow hair. I hope that's just because he likes the look of the shaved head. Because
I bet you they're probably going to... Yeah, because he did have hair back in the day. Because Luke Cage doesn't have hair now. They might just go with the bald look.
Yeah. So they're changing taps here, guys, in case you're curious. That's what all the banging is. It's not somebody being beaten outside with a large aluminum bat. But, all right. Tony, I thought this was interesting. This was on Bleeding Cool, and basically what they mentioned something about the fact that George R.R. Martin, who is famous for Game of Thrones, apparently was in talks with Marvel about writing comics for them. And Marvel was quoted as saying that his conditions, quote, seemed unworkable. And then there was something through MTV where they found an interview, I guess, with Martin. And I guess what it was, and this is just interesting because according to MTV and this interview, was that Martin had his lawyers meet with Marvel's lawyers, and he wanted the condition in there that whatever he wrote in would be in the story and would continue on forever. You couldn't retcon it, you couldn't reboot it, you couldn't reimagine it, you couldn't do any of that shit. You couldn't go, that happened, sure that happened. In a dream.
Yeah,
no. He wanted
that. All in Hurley's mind.
So basically what he wanted to do was he wanted to be able to go in there, write a comic, kill whoever the fuck he wanted, and they'd stay dead forever.
Here's the thing. A, he shouldn't be entertaining writing comics when he needs to finish his fucking series. And any fan of his will tell you that. But B, I will also say those, what he's asking for, very unrealistic. And no, there's no reason why Marvel put the kibosh on that. However, knowing his way of writing and knowing that if that were true, all this shit would happen, damn well there'd be a million people picking up those books because of that.
Well, and I guess the one thing that according to this part of the interview that I read, he really wanted to work on Doctor Strange, and because Doctor Strange was always one of his favorites. But he also said that basically he didn't think that Doctor Strange should be a main part of the Marvel Universe. He should be on the fringe. He should not be on a team. He should not, like, be, you know, joining up with people. He should have his own thing. And he's there to kind of save people when it's outside the realm of just superheroes, when it's more of that, you know, mystical, otherworldly beings type shit. So, I'm like, I would really like to see what he could do with it. But, you know, I think the way to solve this is put him in the Ultimates world.
Yeah.
And that just came to me right now. Thank you, beer, because you made me smarter. I.e. the Buffalo Theory. Go look up the Buffalo Theory online, kids. You'll appreciate it later.
Great white buffalo.
Great white buffalo. All right, okay, a couple things. Because I said kids, which thus reminded me of our buddy Jay over at anelegantweapon.ca. That's CA for Canada, eh? If you guys are Star Wars fans, go check out Jay's podcast, An Elegant Weapon. But Marvel is reprinting its original comic book versions of the original trilogy of the Star Wars films prior to The Force Awakens coming out. So Marvel's reprinting Marvel comics.
Okay.
But it was just kind of...
They got to cash in somehow right now with not having many stories to print out yet.
Well, yeah, and I think the thing is I don't think there's a whole lot that they can actually do until this shit comes out. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that... I know that it's... I'm so fucking stupid. I almost said, I know it's going to be in 2015. but, yeah, so this is coming next year. I think that if I understand correctly, that it might be coming out as early as January.
Okay.
So, there are some really cool, like they're doing some new covers for it. I did see the 80 Granoff cover for it, which Tony, I'll spin around and show you that it's just, I mean, it really looks like those old school movie posters, except the characters actually look like the actors on there. So, but yeah, so keep your eye out for that. And when you go see, or when you go listen to An Elegant Weapon, tell Jay we said sorry.
Hey. Valiant has a new book coming out called Divinity, and pretty much the synopsis is Earth's about to get a new god, and he's a communist. And the gist of the story is back in the Cold War era, Soviet Union, man, if I could speak well.
Me talk words.
trying to win the space race, and they sent one of their astronauts farther than anything else. Like, he overshot the moon. And this person comes back.
Oops, we missed.
We're winning this race. The race to the outer fringe of the universe. And he gets some powers of space and time and all that in between. So it's going to be interesting. Valiant, I feel their characters and some of their stories are just amazingly complex in how they create some of their characters. And I like that world that they've created for them.
You know, I got to say, I think Valiant... Excuse me. Wow, this beer's catching up to me. I think Valiant doesn't get as much credit as it deserves a lot of times. Because I think anybody that would just walk in, especially if they had zero knowledge of any superhero-type characters at all, I think if they picked up Marvel, DC, and Valiant all at the same time, I think they would appreciate Valiant more.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact that there's that general idea that you have a little bit of previous knowledge just from, you know, cultural context, people gravitate more to the Marvel and DC, whereas Valiant, I think, probably does a better job overall with their superhero type people. Anyway, that's just my commentary.
I totally agree with that. One of the other cool things that I've learned from this is going to be debuting in their first deluxe Valiant Prestige format, which pretty much is going to be matte laminated stock covers, custom designed and sheets within, exclusive back matter, so like extras and everything, and much more, with no advertisements and a standard $3.99 price. And if they're going to do a couple more books like that to kind of get readers in, that's a hell of a fucking deal.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have two other quick things. One, Xenoscope is announcing, they announced a couple new miniseries. One is The White Queen, which follows like the Wonderland series and Callie. But the more interesting one is a four-issue series where it's The Little Mermaid. But it's not, obviously it's Xenoscope, so it's not The Little Mermaid you know. So keep your eyes out for that one.
Are there Who's This and What's Its Galore?
What?
Do they have thingamabobs?
What?
I've got 20.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Well, who cares? No big deal.
You're...
want more. You've never heard that song?
No.
Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I don't. Sorry, dude. I'm a grown-up. anyway, yeah, so this is Erica, the Little Mermaid, not Ariel, by the way. I just want to point that out. But, yeah, so this is, you know, and she was introduced in the Grimm Fairy Tales, Myths and Legends, but this is going to be her own story. The last thing I wanted to bring up was back in the 60s, and actually it was 1966, if what I read was correct, The Thunderbirds was a show that was created for kids, and it was all, like, marionette puppets. And it was basically what Team America was based on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Thunderbirds are go! You know, there's a new movie coming out with the Thunderbirds. I didn't know this. I'm really fucking interested to find out what it is. There was a teaser trailer, which is only like 15 seconds long, and it's mostly audio and showing a space station. So there, you don't have to watch it, because that's all there is to it. I'm sorry, it's 20 second spot. I'm just really curious, and now actually I want to go back and watch some of these old Thunderbirds shows, because they're creepy as fuck.
Oh yeah, just the way the dead eyes of the marionettes.
Yeah, and the weird mouths moved, and the way they just stumbled along and, like, you know, like all epileptic, shuffled across the
screen. I don't know, though, you are making me think of more Team America, how stupid that was.
But. Yeah, but anyway, so keep your eye out for that. That's it for news. Tony, you got Indie Turnpike?
Yes, Indie Turnpike this week is from Bongo Comics, and it is McBain number one. Which, if you're not familiar with Bongo Comics, is pretty much Simpsons stuff.
Yeah.
And this is called Have Body Bag, Will Travel. Written by Nathan Kane, pencils by John Delaney, inks by Andrew Peepoy. an art by Villanueva, colors by Art Nelavula.
You sure you got that one?
I hope so. The reason why I picked this up is because, A, I was like, I've never really read a Simpsons comic. I still enjoy the Simpsons.
Well, and it was a couple weeks ago, Kevin talked about, you know, the Simpsons Illustrated or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, and how awesome it was. But I just saw this and it said giant poster included, and I go, I get a comic and a Simpsons poster? Sure, why not? You sold me. And the person when I was checking out at my comic book shop said, you're going to really love this. So I open it up. All right, there's no staples. What the hell? Wait, why does this unfold? And we'll get to the meat of how this is set up in here. Ultimately, the story is following McBain, the giant Arnold Schwarzenegger of the Simpsons world. This book had me laughing my ass off. This is what a true comic book I feel sometimes should be. Whimsical, funny. I need you to read these two little panels out loud.
All right, so Tony wants me to actually read this. McBain is looking on like a little video communicator, and it says, sorry, McBain, Dr. Malevolent is a gene-splicing madman. Our early intel suggested you'd be fighting a giant cyber puma. It's not a puma. And then he says, from the telecom, you'd best get your men out of there before those apes tear you apart. Abort the mission. And McBain says, you heard the man. Get to the chopper.
I'm so glad you did it in the voice that it should be.
Yeah. Grab my hand. That's my Arnold impersonation. Is that?
This thing is so full.
That's way better than your Puddin' Pops, and I don't think Puddin' Pops impersonations are appropriate anymore.
Yes, and I'm not going to do that. This thing is so full of puns. There's another part where there's a dentist's office, I believe it was, where there's these giant fake teeth, and he tells the person, get to the chompers.
Get to the chompers, nice.
It, all in all, was a fun read. But
okay, I want to get to how this comic is actually laid out, because
yes,
it's your standard comic size.
Yep, and then when you open it up, it pulls out to four panels long.
Yeah.
And you can read it straight across, and then you lift the entire four panels to get... And actually, the back page of this actually explains how to read it, because then it says you get to the meat and potatoes of the book.
Oh, the meat and the gravies?
Yes.
Shut up. No, this thing opens up. It's a giant, 8x8 poster, 8-page by 8-page poster. And so you can read it like it's a giant fold-out. But then on the back side of the actual comic is the giant McBain poster. And
For the action movie that this is.
This is one of those comics where actually I think you should go buy two versions. One so you can hang the poster up, and then the other so that you can hang up the comic.
Yeah, and this is what made it so much fun. It was just different. As I talked last week reading Sandman, where you had to flip over some panels and or change the book around to read, this one you really had to unfold the story, if you will.
The story unfolded before your eyes. Yeah. And so did the poster.
This is very, very much, like I said, a fun read. It's a Simpsons character that doesn't show up a lot within the show, but...
Well, and the thing is that I don't even think you need to be a Simpsons fan to enjoy that, because if you like the movie shit with the then you're gonna enjoy it
and just read it in Arnold's voice in your head and you'll laugh.
Booze in a Book, brought to you by inkwhiskey.com, as is actually our whole show, but they get the special shout out here. By the way, if you guys haven't gone and checked out the brand new flasks that they have, 5 new titles, inkwhiskey.com, do it. Tony, I actually think I'm going to surprise you a little bit. This week, my book for Booze in a Book is My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Omnibus Volume 1.
Okay.
And I'm pairing this with a case of beer from Shorts called Thirst Mutilator.
What? That doesn't seem like they get paired at all.
Well, there's a couple reasons. One is Shorts' description of the beer, which... It's not just light. It's extremely electrolyte. And then I want you to see the artwork that goes on the label.
Oh my God, that is creepy awesome.
So this beer, by the way, it has an ABV of 6%. And when they say it's light, it's only 19 IBUs. So yes, it's very light. The artwork on this is, it's basically, it's a My Little Pony rearing up on its hind legs, but it's a unicorn My Little Pony. And its front hooves are actually chainsaws like Ash from The Walking Dead. So yeah, you guys need to go see this. And actually, I think we'll put this picture up.
You mean Evil Dead?
Or Evil, what did I say?
Walking Dead. Yeah.
Damn it. Thank you, beer. So much for your buffalo theories, you fucks. But yeah, no, this, I actually got this beer in a sampler pack. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. Now, someone who will remain anonymous at this point, mutual friend, perhaps family member of perhaps my girlfriend, is a brony.
Hmm.
So guess what he got for Christmas? A bottle of Thirst Meat later. But no, the beer's good. And you know, here's the great thing. You know, Shorts is probably my favorite brewery.
Yeah.
It is a Michigan brewery, so I don't know where you can get it outside of the state. But this is, it's your lawnmower beer. You know, it's your PBR, it's your Bud Light, but there's fucking flavor to it, and it's good. It's light, it's enjoyable, it's fun. My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, yeah, it's light, it's fun, and I wanted you to have the omnibus because I think you should have a case of this beer at the same time. Just sit there, read My Little Pony, get fucking drunk as shit, and have fun. So
maybe do some LSD and hallucinate and...
No, that's a different one altogether. That's your Sandman book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Shrooms and Sandman. You know, it's like... Yeah, so... Anyway, check them out, guys. That pretty much does it.
You got anything last call?
There's only one, actually, that I had for last call that I really wanted to bring up this week. Just because it was... Actually, I take it back. There's two. Like I said, it was a short week, and I haven't read all my books. But the two that I read that I really did want to give a shout-out to... For you Stephen King Dark Tower fans, issue 5 of 5 of The Dark Tower, The Drawing of the Three, came out. And I read the very first trade of The Dark Tower. Or maybe it was probably just The Gunslinger, I guess. Years ago. And I enjoyed it, but I have a big problem with them putting that book into pictures for me.
It ruins the picture in your head.
I have such a vivid drawing in my own imagination of what that world and those people look like that I didn't want to see it. The Drawing of Three, I think, has done such a great job of encapsulating who those people are. And I was a little bit pissed off when they showed Roland for the first time in this because I didn't remember what he looked like in that other one. And when they showed him, I'm like, he's too skinny and young. And then I realized it ties in with the story. It's not actually Roland that you're seeing. So very, very well done on that. That's from Marvel. And then the issue 3 of 3 of Mimetic from Boom Studios. I may end up having to come back and talk about this book later.
Okay.
You know, and this is one of those books where, you know, I'm going to do my best to see if we can't get the creators on. Because I think you and I, even if we can't, it would be worth it to sit there and have us go through and break down this book because it's that good.
Sounds good.
Those are my two.
Last one really I have, I mean, I was able to read a few more, but as you were saying, just holidays and time and all this.
Fucking Christmas.
Yeah. I did get to read Superior Iron Man, and the reason why I mention it now is because what I mentioned in the last time, he gave Matt Murdock his sight back, but said it was temporary. And him being a dick saying, you know, I'll give it to you for free if you help me out. And ultimately, you know, Matt, being the good guy, said, no, I'm not going to do that. Iron Man does his own thing, but it's actually following Matt in this book.
I thought we were just mentioning the books. Are we reviewing more?
No, I was just going to say the reason why it was awesome is he goes and knocks on Foggy's door and says... He's like, what do you want, Matt? And he's, I just wanted to see you, you know, and It's like, what do you mean? He goes, just...
Wait, Daredevil said, I just want to see you?
Yeah, because he could see with his eyes.
Oh, that's right. Oh, damn it.
And he was losing it, and right then and there, he loses it, and you see his Daredevil vision come back to where you see the lines, so he can see the face, but he could truly see it with his vision, and I thought that was kind of a really nice thing that was...
It's actually touching. I'm going to go cry now. All right. Being an ass. All right.
Santa's watching.
Yeah, fuck Santa. I got a whole lot more days to make up for it. So, all right. Well, that does it for us. This is the final podcast of this year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. Well, thank you guys for an amazing, you know, another year. And I guess we'll be back next year. Talk to you more about your comics. So keep reading them. And we'll talk to you guys then.
See ya.
That's it. That's it. That's all you got.
At least you didn't say watering hole. I'm so happy.
I didn't say watering hole. Okay. Watering hole.